Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On January 14, 2008, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Virginia v. Moore. The court was asked to consider whether the Fourth Amendment requires a suppression of evidence obtained incident to an arrest that is based on probable cause, where the arrest violates a provision of state law. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, George Washington University School of Law professor Orrin Kerr discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Kerr.
Today I'm going to talk about Virginia v. Moore, a Fourth Amendment case that was argued today, January 14, 2008. This is really the only big Fourth Amendment case on the Supreme Court's docket. This is a fairly light term for criminal procedure generally. And it's a case that really explores a nuance in the law of arrest and search incident to arrest. Let me just start with a little bit about the facts of the case, and then I'm going to talk about the history of this issue and also how the argument went, and then I'm going to give a few ideas as to what the court might do and then what I think the court should do. The facts of the case are fairly straightforward. This is a case involving a traffic stop in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Moore was stopped for not having a valid license. Turns out under Virginia law, the police could not arrest him for the offense, at least in the way that they did. They violated Virginia law in arresting Moore and then searching him incident to arrest. Lo and behold, in searching Moore incident to arrest, the police find crack cocaine on his person. And the charges against him quickly change from driving without a valid license to possession with intent to distribute crack cocaine. The question in the case is whether the crack cocaine should be suppressed in violation of the Fourth Amendment's prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures. In this particular case, it's clear that the police had probable cause to believe that Moore was committing a crime in the Commonwealth of Virginia, namely driving without a valid license. However, the state law prohibited Moore from being arrested, and he was in fact arrested and then searched incident to the arrest. And the question is whether the Fourth Amendment is violated because state law prohibits the arrest in that setting. Now, to answer this, there are really two different questions that arise under the Fourth Amendment. The first question being whether the arrest is unconstitutional because it violates state law. The second being, independently of whether the arrest is unconstitutional, whether the search is unconstitutional, incident to that arrest, because of the violation of state law. There's sort of these two different steps. Regardless of which one is picked, you end up getting sort of similar issues arising, but the question is which stage of the search and seizure is implicated. The argument of Virginia in defense of the stop and the arrest and the search, discovering the crack cocaine, is that all the Fourth Amendment requires is probable cause. That's a standard of Fourth Amendment law going back to the common law, and there's no independent requirement that the arrest or the search be consistent with state law. They say, hey, the only thing that really matters is probable cause. There was probable cause here. The argument of the defendant, of Moore in this case, is primarily that the arrest becomes unconstitutional when it doesn't further a state interest. You can determine the state interest in a case like this by looking at state law. If the state has not allowed an arrest in such a setting, it must be that the arrest is not going to further state law, and therefore the arrest is an unreasonable seizure under the Fourth Amendment. There's a second argument which was sort of lurking in Moore's brief and that made a much more significant appearance in the oral argument today, which is that regardless of the constitutionality of the arrest, the search incident to arrest doctrine is the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine. Relying on cases going back to the 1920s, Supreme Court has always said it's the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine. And, well, the question becomes what determines the lawfulness of the arrest? And there are certainly cases, one of them, a 1948 decision called United States versus DeRee, which suggests that the lawfulness for the purposes of the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine is the lawfulness under state law. So it may be, and this is the argument, the sort of second argument raised by Moore, that the arrest is constitutional, but the search incident to arrest is unconstitutional because of the state law violation. At the oral argument this morning, the justices were generally pretty favorable towards the Commonwealth of Virginia. They seem inclined to think that it's a pretty good rule to have a straight probable cause standard. Just let officers focus on the probable cause question and not worry too much about the state law issues. I think part of what motivates that is a sense that the justices really don't know where state law could go. There are a lot of questions along the lines of, well, what happens if the state or a state picks a rule governing arrest that is as follows? And then you sort of imagine the hypothetical, something sort of odd, something strange, something that the officers can't predict. And the justices are thinking, well, wait a minute, we've got the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine. We don't want to just hand it over to state legislatures. And also, what if a state legislature wanted to have a rule governing arrest that didn't regulate the suppression of evidence in the search as incident to arrest? If we say that the state law governs, well, then aren't we basically forcing the states to have a suppression remedy? Those are some of the concerns motivating the justices. Again, they were pretty skeptical of Moore's argument. And the focus really became an argument, what about this search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine? And whether there are precedents that the court has suggesting that lawfulness is a question of state law rather than federal law, focusing again on the second stage of things, whether the search is constitutional, not so much on whether the preceding arrest is constitutional. What's fascinating about this case is that it pulls the different justices in different directions. There are sort of two different ways that you could end up wanting to rule in favor of Moore, the defendant. One is, of course, those justices that are sort of more likely to be inclined to rule in favor of criminal defendants in criminal procedure cases. The more sort of civil liberties-oriented justices, say Justice Stevens or Justice Ginsburg, they seem sort of favorably inclined to Moore's argument, as you'd sort of more or less expect. The other set of justices which is in play here is, interestingly, the more originalist justices. Why? Well, because the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine sort of derives from common law. The cases go back 100 years, and it was a matter of established black-letter law going back to that time that the lawfulness of an arrest in the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine is a question of state law, governing law. It's a question independent of the constitutionality of the arrest. What's unusual about the case is that there are precedents, including the DeRee precedent that I mentioned earlier, which seem to suggest fairly clearly that it's the state law that governs, and that it's the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine. On one hand, that's fairly clear, and I personally think should govern the outcome in this case. At the same time, there are certainly authorities suggesting that the DeRee case and other cases are not really Fourth Amendment cases. Maybe they were overruled by some later cases that are in tension with the earlier cases. This is a very fact-specific area. It's an area in which the court has decided a lot of case-by-case kind of decisions. And there's room to say, well, maybe the early authorities don't quite mean what they seem to mean, or maybe the later cases overrule the earlier cases. For the non-originalist-leaning justices, there's certainly room to reach that result. I think there are more or less plausible ways of reaching that result. One way that's less plausible is to say that the later cases implicitly adopted the notion that state law is irrelevant under the Fourth Amendment. In fact, underlying state law is often relevant in the Fourth Amendment, the most obvious setting being in the probable cause determination itself. So just as recently as Maryland versus Pringle, a case decided in 2003, the court said, listen, when we make probable cause determinations, that's a common sense determination based on the governing law, and in the case of the Maryland case, governing state law. So state law clearly has a role. What's the most persuasive way that the court could get past the DeRay precedents? I think, actually, in sort of an interesting historical way the court could do that, and it would go something like this. The doctrine has always been search incident to a lawful arrest. However, it was search incident to a lawful arrest at a time before the incorporation of the Fourth Amendment as applied to the states. So when the courts talked about search incident to a lawful arrest, they never really dealt with questions of state law, because most arrests pursuant to state law were state arrests, and the Fourth Amendment didn't even apply to the states. So take that, for example, in the case of United States versus DeRee. That's this 1948 case, which involved a joint arrest by a state officer and a federal officer, ultimately leading to charges of a federal crime. In 1948, the Fourth Amendment did not apply to the states at all. It was 1 year before Wolf versus Colorado incorporated the basic protections of the Fourth Amendment and applied them to the states under the 14th Amendment. And then, of course, 12 years later under Mapp versus Ohio, the suppression remedy of the Fourth Amendment is also incorporated. All of that is a future event at the time of the United States versus DeRee precedent. And as a result, what happens with the bulk of criminal cases that are state cases involving state law, it just doesn't matter from the standpoint of the Fourth Amendment, because the Fourth Amendment doesn't regulate those guys. So as a result, I think there's an interesting historical case that could be made that as you incorporate the Fourth Amendment through the Due Process Clause under Wolf versus Colorado and Mapp versus Ohio, maybe the meaning of lawfulness and the search incident to a lawful arrest doctrine changes. That's, I think, the best way that the DeRee precedent could be distinguished from the standpoint of a justice who's concerned with precedent, who's concerned with the original intent of the Fourth Amendment or the Due Process Clause. It's that kind of reasoning that I think is the best way of distinguishing the DeRee case. How will the votes line up in this case? That's the big question, of course, at this stage of the game. Keep your eyes out for the possibility of some sort of left-right versus the center type of a coalition along the lines of what you see in cases like Kylo versus United States or Blakely versus Washington. These are cases where it so happens that the originalist justices, the rules over standards justices, Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, make a pact, happen to come out the same way as those justices generally considered more on the liberal side, Justice Ginsburg, for example. That's a possibility in this case. You might have sort of an ends against the center type of a case. On the other hand, based on the way argument went, it may be that this just becomes an overwhelming decision in favor of the state, on the theory that probable cause is what the Fourth Amendment demands, and that's it. And questions of state law, while a state can certainly handle them as a matter of the state constitution or of state statutory law, are not questions that need concern the federal Fourth Amendment. We should have a decision on the case in a few months, certainly by the end of June. Stay tuned to see what happens.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.